Welcome to Loveline. Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised.
Are you ready? Then brace yourself.
This is Loveline with Kevin Kenny and Dr. Tara.
Call or text 833-LOVE-191.
Loveline is on now.
Woo! What a week. We are live on the world famous K-Rock. It is January 12th, 2025, and in a weird way, if you're listening to the podcast on demand in the future at some point, you probably have a better grasp on what this week means, what it has meant, than we do right now as we're just trying to process the past 5 or 6 days or so as, I guess, what they'll come to be known as the wildfires of 2025 have probably changed L.A. for the rest of time. It is Kevin Kenny, Dr. Tara here.
Hi.
And producer Muggs as well.
Hello.
And really, I think, I mean, we're 5 episodes into a pretty iconic show called Loveline. I would say this is an unprecedented episode, wouldn't you say, Dr. Tara?
Oh, yeah.
Muggs?
Oh, 100%.
You would agree? I mean, just trying to wrap your head around the past couple days here in Los Angeles is just, it's really crazy. I mean, I don't know how you're doing, Dr. Tara. We'll get into it. Muggs, you've been here all your life. I'm really curious to hear what the past week has been like for you. What I would firstly like to do is talk about some of the amazing resources that K-Rock has been using their platform on Instagram to talk about. This is LA Helping LA. And Dr. Tara, you were telling me there's an amazing list of places you can donate. I just wanted to get to this right off the top before we even get into Loveline stuff.
Yes. Baby to baby, providing diapers, food, formula, and hygiene products for children and families affected by the fires. Sweet Relief Musicians Fund, accepting donations and application for musicians and industry workers impacted by fires. Music Cares, providing emergency funds for music industry colleagues impacted by the fires. World Central Kitchen prepares and serves fresh meals to communities impacted by natural disasters. So definitely check it out. Lastly, we have California Community Foundation, AIDS for long-term recovery efforts.
Right on. And there's so many, you know, just so great places that have stepped up. And I mean, I was just watching the news. There's something called the Dream Center. I don't know if you saw any of that, Muggs, on the news, but they've been doing great stuff. I don't even understand exactly what it is, but it looks incredible.
There's so much stuff.
There is stuff. You're talking about in the world, Muggs, or you're talking about what we're talking about?
No, are the resources from this fire. There's so many things to take advantage of if you're truly a victim.
Yeah.
It's so heartwarming. LA like really come together, but not only LA people. I mean, I've seen people, you know, there's firefighters from Mexico, people from Africa, like coming to help LA.
Yeah. No, it's incredible, the outpouring in the community. It's funny, I was filling in over the weekend, and I was we came out of like a No Doubt song, and a couple of songs before that I was playing a System of a Down song on K-Rock, and both those are LA, you know, Southern California, Orange County bands, if you will. And there was something that just struck me playing these local bands, and it just kind of reminded me just how amazing the people and the natives of Los Angeles and Southern California are, and what they're capable of. Of course, that through the lens of art and music, but then also community.
Yes.
You're just reminded when you listen to a station like K-Rock, which if anything was built on community, bands like Sublime, 311. I mean, you look at the bill of our recent Almost Acoustic Christmas, where we announced this show, Loveline coming back. I mean, those are bands that have been on K-Rock and a part of K-Rock for a long time. That is community, and I think community is at the heart of what has sort of, or what has made LA beautiful in the aftermath of such tragedy, and what will continue to as well in the coming weeks, in the coming months here in Southern California. What was your experience, though, Dr. Tari? Because we're all sort of, not to dox any one of us, but we're all sort of in different parts of Los Angeles, but how did you sort of, what was your experience this week?
Yeah, so I'm in the South Bay. I'm not close to the fire, not that close to the fire. However, it was very scary for me at the beginning of all of this and seeing all the news and seeing how fast it spread. So I have never been a part of like a natural disaster. I was never like present anywhere.
And you grew up in Thailand, though, right?
I grew up in Thailand. We had that huge tsunami in the south of Thailand.
Yes.
Huge tsunami.
2004. It was like right around Christmas, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it's a massive story.
And tons of people died. I wasn't in the country. I was abroad.
Wow.
But like, yeah, that was the only kind of big, you know, we have flooding quite often in Bangkok, but not like, not this amount of tragedy.
I don't know
say.
What this to compare this scary. To. I don't know what to compare this to. I was going to say, because
in your experience,
yeah, because even my, you know, I grew up in New Jersey back east, and of course, I'm sure anybody who's a transplant here, if you're listening to K-Rock or you're listening to Love and on K-Rock tonight, your friends from wherever you're from have hit you up this week, of course, just check in on you, or I'd hope they would. And I was trying to compare it to a hurricane, and you know, because I remember growing up, we had Hurricane Sandy, that was a big deal.
Ooh, yeah.
When I was really little, there was a hurricane back east called Hurricane Floyd, and but those sort of die down, like those sort of, there's like a clear moment where the storm has passed.
Yeah.
And or even, you know, if you think of something as awful, God forbid, as like an attack, there's obviously like a moment where that is over. But this was, I think what makes this really strange to process is it's not clear if it's over or not.
Right. It's still going.
It's like this monster in a horror movie, and like you think you may have gotten it, and then there's that moment where it pops back up.
Right.
And there's been those moments throughout the week. I mean, I remember it was initially just the Palisades, and then Eden, of course. But then I found out through Muggs' Instagram story that Runyon Canyon was on fire at some point this week. And then the Hollywood Hills had to evacuate. And that was terrifying. And then like a house was on fire in Studio City in San Fernando Valley. And then I believe the Palisades fire eventually got pretty close to Muggs. But it is pretty wild. Do you remember, though, you were on vacation, I guess, in Finland at the time of the 2004 tsunami. You eventually then went back to Thailand after. How did that event affect Thailand and where you lived?
I mean, people were grieving for a long time. I'm from Bangkok. It's really far from the south. So we weren't, you know, physically affected. However, I think as a country, we were mourning for a long time and also helping the south rebuild, because that's our gold mine, like where we really like economically flourish, because that's where people go, like Phuket. And Koh Phi Phi and
Koh Phangan. I'm acting like I know what she's talking about.
All the islands down south where, like, basically everybody... The Hangover. Okay. The movie. It's where everybody goes to, like, all the foreigners go to. So that's kind of where our GDP again, comes from. And the fact that that was destroyed completely and we had to rebuild, I mean, it affected the whole country.
Do you remember anything of how you got through that?
I would say my family was really proactive in like asking us how we feel, like is everything okay, like if everything's okay, and if there's anything, like, you know, come talk to us. I feel like I was too young to process it.
No, I definitely, I was a child when 9/11 happened in New York, and I remember my mom couldn't leave the city for a week, and I remember being like 8 or 9 years old and just being mad she couldn't drive me to the mall.
So when you're a kid, you can't process
You can't process it, and you just like, you know, you don't even realize, you know, but I mean, I'm an adult now, and I don't know if I can even process the things that I've seen on the news. I mean, entire sections and communities, that word again, are just gone from LA. I mean, I've seen Gavin Newsom talk about an LA 2.0. I mean, it really feels, I don't know what he means by that, but it really does feel like it's weird to say this, but you're living through a historical event. I saw on social media, I hope this is accurate, that it, like, the size of, I believe, just the Palisades fire, you know, don't quote me on here, but it trumps the Great Chicago Fire, which is thought of as this historical, like, altering event in the city of Chicago. I mean, I think in like the early 1900s or late 1800s, but to think of just the size of it is just remarkable.
And bigger than Central Park in New York City.
Well, Muggs told me it was bigger than Manhattan. Is that true?
This is where we run into problems with social media, because we don't know what we believe. But no, there was a meme or something, or a diagram that said the acreage of Manhattan is 14,000 square feet around.
Okay.
And the acreage that had burned at one point in the Palisades fire a couple days ago was 17,000.
Okay. So, but we don't know if that's true or not. You get your news from memes.
I get my news from
memes.
From you.
From memes. I don't give you your news. I get my news from you, Muggs.
So as of now, the Palisades fire is 23,000 acres. So
I mean, I can't even wrap my head around that, man. I really can't. I know, the math, right?
Like, how big is that? It's huge.
Yeah. Like, I think, and it's like, I don't know, but just when you really sit with, I mean, like, people's, like, this changes people's lives. This changes people's, this, you know, it's just, you can send thoughts and prayers all you want. It's just, it's like, it's to really wrap your head around it is incredible. And you just got to kind of, I guess, try to. You know, Muggs, I'm curious what your experience this week was. I mean, you're born and raised here in Los Angeles, quite literally live where you were born and raised. And and you were, I guess, you kind of had to go back to your parents' house and sort of make sure they were good.
Yeah, because the fire, from where they live, there's 6 miles of Santa Monica Mountain Ridge separating them and the Palisades. They're on the valley side.
Right. I thought you didn't want to be specific. He told us before the show.
I didn't give the address.
Okay, you're like, it's approximately 0.25 miles from the intersection of...
No, I didn't get that specific. But anyway, so, I mean, the first night the Palisades fire broke out, I already knew that, you know, it's 6 miles away. Went over to their house. I saw the glow from Tuesday night in the Palisades. By Thursday... the smoke was immense over the valley. I mean, everybody saw that in the 818. Even as far as Norwalk, people were seeing smoke. And by Friday night into Saturday morning, there was one ridge that the fire had to cross. And if it did, it would have been in the San Fernando Valley. But shout out to all the Cal Fire people, all the people on the ground, all the resources, the first responders that came together. I'd like to say they kicked that fire's ass. I mean, they set up.
Well, then say that.
Yeah.
You just said it.
Yeah, they kicked that fire's ass. They set up fire lines, and they really, like, they drew a circle around it with that Foz check, which is that red stuff that they drop from the big tanker planes, which is water soluble, by the way. So,
can I ask you a question? I try and get you to do tasks around the office, and I'll show you things like, you know, editing software, and you don't know your left from your right when it comes to a computer, but you know all this stuff about this.
Yeah, man, it's interesting.
It's very interesting, and obviously it's poignant this week, but how do you know all this?
I've been glued to the television screen.
Okay, that's what I was getting at. It's because he tries to pawn this off like he's the expert, what he's doing. Like that ridge comment, it needed to pass one ridge.
One ridge, man. One mountain ridge in the Santa Monica Mountains. And by the way, the city of Manhattan is, in fact, 14,000 acres.
It was great, though, because at some point this week, Muggs just, you know, he was kind of, he was on it earlier in the week and letting us know he couldn't come in because, you know, obviously family comes before everything.
Right.
But then at a certain point, he just stopped telling people. And so we didn't know where Muggs was for a couple of days, and we were worried about him. And then he was just at home. And so he called me all worried one night, and he was talking to me, and he kind of outlined what he was just talking to you and just how grave things were. And then I said, well, what are you doing, man? Like, you need help or anything? Oh, no. I invited a friend over, and they're hanging out. We're just hanging out here. So in the face of this immense danger, and it was really scary, if you're listening to the podcast or the live show right now on KROQ and you live in Los Angeles, the greater Southern California area, it was really, really, really scary this week. And in that critical time, Muggs said, this is really dangerous where I am. I'm a ridge away from this fire. Let me call my friends.
Yeah, because it's emotional support friends, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
I was by myself. My parents had evacuated. I was the man holding the front line for the house in the neighborhood. I needed someone there with me.
Are we allowed to say it's a lady friend?
Doesn't matter what you say. It was a friend.
Well,
I'd like to say that.
I think it's valid. Yeah, during tragedy, you want social support, which is great.
Do you think anybody, because obviously it's amazing. We talk about that community of people just like, hey, you know, mi casa, su casa in these times of need. But I also know some people that they themselves are not, they don't even have necessarily a consistent roof over their head. And I've seen them on social media offering, you know, I'm talking the struggling artists of this town, you know, some of them I'm friends with, and they're offering rooms to people in need. And I think that the vast majority, that's fantastic. That's admirable. I do think there is a minority, though, that are using this to hopefully a girl is displaced and then they can invite a girl over to their house. Do you think that's happening?
I hope not.
I don't want to call anybody else, but I see some of these people and I go, I don't even know if you have a place to live in general, and you're on social media offering your pad to somebody. It just feels a little bit, you know, it feels a little bit fishy.
Opportunist.
Some of them I think are opportunists. Okay. Because I do, you know, a friend of mine told me this week that his girlfriend had, this is a convoluted story, but a friend of mine told me that his girlfriend, one of her good friends, heard from multiple exes this week.
Oh.
And I think it is sort of like one of those things.
A way to get back in.
Especially if your ex lives in Southern California.
They're just checking in on you.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, want to get back together?
And that could be admirable, but we also, it's Loveline, we have to sort of acknowledge that maybe some of those aren't that, you know,
unpack
they are
shady motives.
They might be a little, you know, nefarious, if you will. But the vast majority, of course, are having good hearts and with good intentions. Now, Muggs, you your Instagram story this week was very fascinating because it started, I guess, like it was noble and you were reporting from the front lines. And then it would be like footage of this fire and then like a little commentary of things he heard on the news and he's pawning off as his own ideas. And then it would just cut to like a bottle of liquor. And then it would cut back to the fire. And then it would cut back to like an empty bottle of liquor. And then the posts would get more and more aggressive. And then eventually the attention on his story turned away from the fires. And now it was on like arsonists and that he was going to go out and he was going to go out and get the arsonists.
No.
So
kick their asses.
The aggression, it became the descending narrative or the loss of narrative on his story was quite compelling this week to follow. But in all seriousness, Muggs, there are looters and even in your neighborhood, there are looters, Muggs. Is this true?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people in that neighborhood had evacuated, whether under mandatory evacuation or warnings, they would evacuate anyway. And there were people checking to see if doors were open.
Now, what did you saw this with your own
eyes?
Yes, man. Is this something you heard about?
No, I saw this.
What did you do? You just watched them do it?
I called the cops.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So on Instagram, you're acting like you're
Vigilante.
Bruce Willis, dude. And then you're clutching your pearls going, police! Which is the right thing to do.
Yeah, you want me to be vigilante justice?
Yeah, you sound like Rambo. The way you like write on Instagram, you literally sound like you think you're Rambo. And then that's really funny that
he
you just watched him
his
do
community.
It. Was it so they were solo?
No, there was like three.
Really?
Yeah.
And was there like a getaway car?
Yeah, of course.
And you watched this, really?
Yeah, there were. So what they would do is they'd come up to this street and where you could see the big orange glow, like close. They pretend they were taking pictures and then they just drive off in the neighborhood. Yeah.
Really?
That's terrible. There's so many opportunists during this time.
Well, but why? Can I ask you a question? I'm asking this so earnestly as somebody who didn't grow up here and who's gone through things like hurricanes and things like, you know, again, like when I was a child, 9/11 happened and things like that. And these things that just have devastated communities is my point. And it just feels like there was never an issue of looting. And what is it? I'm not trying to be critical. I'm honestly curious. Like, what is it about Los Angeles, Muggs, having been born and raised here? Like, what is it about the culture here where that's an aspect of tragedy?
It's a whole different ball game, baby.
What, out here?
Yeah. Okay. It always has been. I mean, I remember going to a Dodger game when I was 5 years old with my dad and my mom. We came back. Our car was gone. Just
what?
Yeah. It's crazy out here, man. It's Los
Angeles.
But
why is it crazy? Does anyone ever stop and ask like why it's crazy? Of course, criminals are a different breed. But it's just like, man. Like, that is just unconscionable.
Well,
and I can't even say that word.
Conscionable.
Conscionable.
Unconscionable.
We can talk about, like, legislation, but in L.A., there's, like, a certain amount that you can steal before you even get in trouble.
Right. Like, but didn't that just change?
Yeah.
That
yeah,
just changed?
Just but changed. But
that does fuel, of
but,
course.
Yeah, but the looting that you see on, like, TikTok, like, you know, the looting at Century City Mall, the looting in the South Bay, like, all this looting is quite recent. And with the law changing to, like,
grand larceny.
$950.
Yeah,
something like
you
that.
You can steal up to $950 and not get in trouble.
Wow.
Like, what stops people from just going into a Target right now and pick up $900 of stuff?
And is that just like generations and generations and generations of the Wild Wild West? Like, you know, no, I'm not making a joke. Like, is that just like the when you think about the Wild Wild West, you know, and just sort of like the chaos of the West being formed, is that just like that just gets kind of passed on?
Think of the Wild Wild West with social media. I think social media exacerbates it as well.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Because
it's
people,
like social comparison, right?
Yeah.
You see your peer or someone that looks like a peer doing something, and you're like, oh, wow, that's cool, and you get away with it?
Yeah.
Muggs, is this the craziest thing? I wanted to ask you this. Is this the craziest thing that you've ever seen in your lifetime in Los Angeles?
As far as fires go, directly in the areas that it happened, yeah, absolutely, 100%. I mean, as far as a devastation level, like on the same scale, this is very reminiscent of the 94 Northridge earthquake.
And just to, for obviously I wasn't here then. I don't think Dr. Tara was either.
No.
Like that, what was the aftermath of, because I've heard of the 94 earthquake, of course, and I think it, everyone has, but what was so devastating about it? I mean, did it destroy structures? Did it destroy homes? What you know?
Structures, mostly every structure in Northridge at Cal State University Northridge was destroyed. Like,
really?
The parking structure looked like it was made of clay. And it
really?
Just like someone just took the giant hand of God, just like twisted it. All the buildings were condemned, red tagged, apartment buildings pancaked on one another. Power outages everywhere. I mean, it affected the whole valley. Couldn't drink your water. Had to boil it. There was stores were sold out of stuff. People were panic buying. It was pretty crazy.
And do you have any memory of like how long the recovery was from that?
Oh, yeah. Like, as far as, like, structural, years. 2-3 years.
Really?
For instance, my mom, she worked at Cal State University Northridge, and her building was red-tagged after the earthquake. She worked in a temporary, like, dome circus tent-looking thing for, like, 3 years until they, like, went back in and, fit, you know, pretty much retrofitted everything and built it back up again, earthquake-proof.
So, I mean, the natural thing to wonder, and I'm wondering it in... You know, I think it's really starting to sink in now, what, 5 or 6 days later, that this is like, this is historic, and this is like history altering, you know? And
like, this is going to be in a textbook.
Yeah. And like, Muggs, what do you think comes next? And I kick it to you because you're sort of like the lifelong Angelino of the show. Like, what does the path forward look like in your eyes?
Years, man. Years of rebuilding. I mean... We're hearing all these stories come out about half of these people had their insurance, you know, pulled out before these wildfires happened. So, I mean, the amount of displaced families that's going to come from this, it's going to be years.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest, though. It did feel a little ridiculous when like we first heard we were going to try to do a Loveline this week because I was just like, you know, in this time, I just couldn't imagine it. But it did dawn on me, and I wanted to credit you, Dr. Tara, that, and others pointed out as well, you know, just as much as it's important to know the resources as far as food, shelter, support, you know, and those are, of course, paramount. Couples, families, relationships, I mean, marriages, they're going to face unprecedented challenges because of this event. And when I thought about that, I thought about how important a show like this could be, especially having somebody like you, Dr. Tara, who matchmakes for a living. You're a doctor, and this is what you do. And I thought it would just be great to sort of explore some of these things and advise families. Again, if you have a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a wife, a husband, what have you, what the next couple of weeks, months, and maybe even years following this tragedy, you know, may look like in your relationship. So we'll dig into that, and we will also hear from Dr. Tara's husband. Yes, he will join the show. That is all straight ahead on Loveline.
The craziest question.
What's the craziest question you've ever gotten on Loveline?
Loveline with Kevin Kenny and Dr. Tara. We'll be right back. Loveline.
Call Loveline.
833.
LOVE191.
Loveline on K-Rock.
If you're listening live, I know he's going to edit it out on the podcast, but if you're listening live, that was so funny. Muggs wanted to do something special there, and I guess he missed the mark. It is Kevin Kenny, Dr. Tara. Producer Muggs, Loveline. You want to get involved with the show, of course. It's been a long week here in Los Angeles, and I don't know. I mean, if for some reason you want to talk to us, it's 1-833-LOVE-191. Before the break, we were talking about this great, great resource, LA Helping LA. You can go to @KROQ to check this out, and it's just an immense carousel post on Instagram. You can swipe through and just see all these great places that you can donate if, of course, you're able to do such a thing. And Dr. Tara, you want to list some of those off?
Yes, Salvation Army for food, shelter, essentials to victims and responders. CORE, C-O-R-E, responds to communities in crisis. LA Food Bank accepts food and monetary donations to help fire victims. Pasadena Humane, providing compassion and care for animals. LA United Way assists low-income individuals affected by the fires, and California Fire Foundation provides emotional and financial assistance to firefighters. And thank you, firefighters.
Oh, I can't. I mean, superheroes.
Scary.
Yeah. I mean, just incredible. And just, you know, not to get into some of the ugliness of this week, but some of the criticisms, I mean, are just so off base and insane, and just I don't even think we should give it the dignity of airtime. But it just popped into my head that those people are just absolutely incredible and selfless and just heroes. Thank you for recognizing them, Dr. Tara. We were talking before the break just about how at first it felt a little weird to do Loveline in the midst of all this, and then you brought this up. A couple other people brought this up about, you know, this affects families. I mean, this affects relationships. This affects marriages. And these are unprecedented times for us as a community in Los Angeles, but also unprecedented for families, relationships, marriages, et cetera. And that's why it's so valuable to have a voice like you, Dr. Tara, here on Loveline to talk about this and how to navigate it. And there's so many different components to what we're going through right now, whether you're directly affected or you're just in Southern California right now, you are indirectly affected. And I wanted to talk about tragedy. And tragedy, of course, takes a lot of different forms. This is, of course, a bona fide tragedy, a historic tragedy. And how does tragedy affect romantic relationships?
Generally, what we've seen in research is like there's two different ways. Like one, it affects negatively on the relationship due to the people that are not able to cope with the stressors. But there's also studies suggesting people coming back even stronger after tragedy in their relationships and reporting higher relationship satisfaction and bonding. So I think the variable here that affects whether or not people thrive and get closer together or they perish and they end up in divorce or breaking up is the ability to cope with stress and communicate.
Okay, and then how do you work on that? Like let's say you're not overly communicative, and let's say you didn't come from a household where, you know, you talked about your feelings or, you know, I mean, let's say you're, let's talk about maybe traditional relationships for a moment and men who think that they have to appear strong right now. And maybe the importance of being able to talk about your feelings. Do you have any advice or guidance of doing that and coping in a healthy way?
I think it's first like really important to acknowledge that everyone can change. Right? Like the guys that are listening that are like, I will never talk about my negative emotions. Like, but the first step is to realize like every human being can change anytime. And, you know, later we'll talk to my husband. Like, he has changed a lot. When I first met him, he was a bad communicator. And then now he is an excellent communicator. So people change and grow. I would say after you can shift your perspective to the fact that, like, all right, like, whatever, I'm ready to change because I know it's better to emote and be communicative. Start talking about positive emotions first because negative emotions are hard. Talk about positive emotions, like things that make you happy. Simple questions to ask each other. Like, let's say we're partners, right? Like, tell me like two things that made you happy this week.
Right. Well,
you want to tell me?
Oh, are we really doing
like, real
this?
Yeah, real quick exercise.
Well, no, I mean, we can do that, but I'm also curious of like more applicable. I mean, like if you're going through the tragedy of this right now, I think that's great advice. Would you say along those lines, it's important to maybe lean into the amazing memories that you had in the structure you may have lost?
100%.
Whether it was yours or a friend's or a loved one's, is that sort of along the same lines as what you're saying, which is start with the positive.
Yeah, start with the positive.
That's key for coping.
And I love that example, actually, using memories and talking about memories, especially through this type of tragedy, like especially like if you lost your home, for example.
Right?
It might be like really hard to talk about the negative emotions you're experiencing and anxiety and also like the uncertainty of future, like what's going to happen, like, where are you going to live, what are you going to do with all your paperwork, your passports, your bank account, talking about memories first will definitely be helpful because it's positive memories. And then I think when people get used to communicating and emoting positively, then they're more likely to jump over to be able to speak about negative emotions.
Right. And what is that? Is that as simple as like you kind of teach your brain that you remind yourself, you remind your soul of all you do have, and maybe it lessens from a perspective, you know, inside your head of what you've lost?
That's a great way to explain it.
You taught
job.
Me well.
That is a great way to explain it. Yeah. You know, there's something like you try to eat a little bit of spicy food. This is a food analogy, but you eat a little bit spicy first, and then you eat a little bit more spicy later, and then you can eat really spicy food later. It's like, it's the same thing with your brain, right? Like, if you teach yourself to speak about emotions, then, you know, sooner rather than later, you'll be able to speak about a bunch of different things.
Right. So you think this is just, am I gathering this correctly? Like, this is just good advice if you can't talk about your emotions in general.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Which is not good for you. It's very unhealthy to not talk about your emotions.
Oh yeah, it's terrible. But in terms of this week, how critical of that is to the coping process is beginning with that positive?
You know, I think this week is all about survival. So people will start to heal at some point. And I think this next week, maybe, you know, after like 5 to 10 days later, people will start that healing process, right? Because healing comes after, like in the aftermath, and we're still in tragedy, like tragedy is still happening. Fire's still going, you know, it's not all gone. It's like 20% contained. So I think a lot of these people are just in survival mode. And when you're in survival mode, your instinct comes in. You're trying to survive with your, maybe it's yourself, your loved ones, your family. I don't think people are going to be thinking too much about like processing their emotions currently, just to be honest with you. But comes next week, I think they'll then sit and, you know, start thinking about like, oh, like all the things that I've lost. And that's where you don't want to swallow all your sadness and grief with your loved ones.
Right. Or swallow like Muggs did unintentionally one time, if you remember that episode.
Nice love line joke here.
No, yeah. But in all, Muggs is thinking bad, and that's disgusting. You can go back to a previous episode to understand what we're talking about there. But is distraction healthy this week? I guess, you know, like how long should survival mode last in this coping process, in your estimation, Dr. Tara? Is there no limit to it? If it goes on too long, is it unhealthy?
I think survival mode is gone when the tragedy is contained. So, like, once, you know, the fires, like when we talked about other, like in the East Coast, right? Hurricanes, and then it stopped. And now people are rebuilding and healing.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, like, once the news are reporting, hey, LA, like, all the fires are contained, we are now safe.
Mm.
I think then people's brain will go, you know, turn on the, oh, what now?
Right.
Yeah.
So afford yourself as long as it takes for that survival mode.
Yeah.
It's okay. You it's okay live to live in safe. That survival mode.
Yeah. But also don't forget to self-soothe. Like self-regulation is really important through going through all this stress. Mm-hmm. Important for yourself, your mental health, your relationship with your spouse, your children. Because some people might get a lot of stress from this situation and then explode in front of their loved ones, and you don't want to, you know, yell at your children or like for, you know, they don't know what's going on. So making sure that you have a self-soothing ritual is really important. Mine, when I get angry or stressed or upset about something, is I stop and I take 4 deep breaths. And the deep breaths I do 4 seconds in, 4 seconds hold, and 4 seconds out. And there's a lot of research behind that type of box breathing, that it helps regulate your nervous system. And you want to regulate your nervous system, because when your nervous system is fried, you can't make any decisions.
So when you talk about self-soothing, of course, that's so important. But, you know, human beings are human beings, and we're all sort of beautifully flawed, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is self-soothing is going to quickly turn into self-medication, especially during these stressful times. And we all do it in different ways, some more unhealthy than others. Mm. Do you have any thoughts on that in terms of, you know, especially people that struggle with, you know, substance abuse, mm-hmm. or reliance on substances and, mm-hmm. and things of that sort, or have maybe in the past and they've been doing great and mm-hmm. something like this that really throws your habits out the window, and just the amount of uncertainty, I think that can give way. to, you know, whether it's a bottle or a pill or whatever your vice is. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that, like, that means you're seeking dopamine. And if you're seeking dopamine and all the other feel-good hormones, like, might as well lean into connecting with your loved ones. Lean into connecting with your spouse, your children. Lean into connecting with your parents, your friends. Because that will also give you the dopamine hit.
Right. So that's it. So you're saying when you're in like a real world example, and you see the smoke, because I mean this happened to me this week where I'm not trying to sound like I was ever in danger, and I say that out of respect for those that were, but the smoke from one of these fires got close enough where I could see it like over the building next to me, and that was even a little too close for comfort. I'm a dork and I reached for chocolates, but in that moment when you reach for something that, you know, might cause you harm, or if you've had issues in the past, you're saying in that moment, sort of maybe like take the idea of dopamine off of this substance and put it on.
Lean into cuddling.
Right. Muggs, you're killing me with that keyboard, buddy. I'm just letting you know.
Lean into cuddling.
Sorry.
If you can mute yourself, that'd be amazing.
I'm stress typing. I'm coping typing.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you. I saw flames, Kevin.
I know. Well, I was going to ask you, did you go to that famous bar this week at all? Like,
you know, it's so funny. I haven't been there since last year. No pun intended.
Okay.
I've been there all year.
You made a last year joke, dude.
Yeah, because I haven't been there all year.
So why not, though? That seems to be like, all jokes aside, I mean, this is kind of like, you know, we're kind of getting real on Loveline. We like to have fun typically, but no, all jokes aside about that bar, you clearly do love that place. That place means a whole heck of a lot to you, Muggs. And obviously you have great community there. Why have you not been back, because of drama reasons?
No. I was a little preoccupied these last few days, Kevin.
I know, but just knowing you, I would feel like you would want. I know. Yeah, he has. Clearly.
Thank you, Tara.
He hasn't been at work, I'll tell you that.
On Beer Mug Cronkite.
What's funny is he's not kidding. He really does think that. But Muggs, have you found yourself tempted to drink more this week, to smoke more this week?
Absolutely.
Okay, so when are those situations for you?
Every minute. Every minute of the day, dude. when I get home, actually. That's right when I get off work, man.
It just all comes crashing down.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And what is it for you, Muggs?
A little bit of alcohol, a little bit of marijuana.
But I'm saying, what is this? Oh. Well, it's clearly, just by looking at you, I can assume. But I'm saying, what is it, in all seriousness, what is it for you? Like, what are the thoughts that sort of drive you to going, I need a drink right now?
Just the unbearable fact that, like, thinking about when the next fire could happen,
right,
especially with the winds coming.
Yeah.
You don't know. Just because you don't, like, just because, you know, they did a badass job containing that, the winds can pick up again and just start shooting those embers, man.
I think that's what no one can understand if you don't live in LA right now. I don't care where you live in Southern California, especially if you live anywhere proximate. I mean, if you saw smoke this week, that's what people can't understand, is the unpredictability.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, and it's this thing where, you know, you want to not act like you're a victim, because there's real victims.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something real that you should, I think, give yourself, the space to grieve, if you want to call it that.
Of course.
Even if you haven't been directly affected, or even if you had to evacuate for a moment and you went back,
right,
I think it's important to remind people, hey, that could have been traumatic for you.
Right.
And the uncertainty of when this. I keep going back to this idea of a monster, because that's the closest thing I can imagine, if I'm trying to convey this to somebody outside of the Los Angeles area, is there's a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the capacity to wipe out everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen it wipe out entire areas and neighborhoods, and history of LA. Because those places are never going to be the same. That history is erased, right? Mm-hmm. As sad as that is to say.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know when that monster's coming back.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, there has been fires like almost every year in that area, like the Malibu area.
Yeah.
Like there was a fire last year too.
Yeah, Muggs was telling me there's like,
obviously,
I mean,
not as remotely big as this, but yeah, there's always been a fire. And I love the point, that you made about, you know, giving yourself grace. Like, yes, maybe you're not physically affected, but you are allowed to collectively grieve with and for other people, you know.
Yeah.
Like during COVID, like, I never got COVID, but so many of my friends did, and their parents, and, you know, people passed, tons of people died. And even though I never had it, like, I remember, like, waking up crying because I just felt so bad. And I felt very stuck because, you know, we were all in the house for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're allowed to grieve, too, even if it didn't affect you personally.
Do you guys want to take a call?
Yeah, do we have a call?
Yeah, hold on one sec.
Okay.
Nice.
We are live on the Air Mugs, is it? Time is of the essence, Mugs.
All right, it's line one.
It's line one?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on.
It's Harlan.
Harlan, you're on Loveline.
What's going on? So, no, I'm just listening to the radio right now, listening to what everybody's got talking about with everything going on with the fires and everything that's going on and how people should be reacting to it.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I think a lot of people should, obviously there's a ton of loss and a lot of things going on, and maybe I hear a lot about, yes, you should be coddling with your family and you should do be everything's going on with the fire and everything that's going on.
Hey, turn your radio down, Harlan. Come on, dude. Radio 101.
Sorry,
yeah.
All right.
So what are you saying, Harlan?
I think there's a lot of different ways to deal with things of, you know, maybe reaching out and finding ways to help people, even though you're in a bad situation yourself. You reach out and contribute to the other people that need help also, and it kind of helps your own self worth also at the same time.
Yeah.
You know?
No, yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's something, Harlan, that is very astute of you to point out, because I think in this world where, you know, we joke, like, people don't go out anymore, they Postmates their breakfast, lunch, and dinner, people aren't socializing like they once were. And I think that what's lost in that is the amazing power and beauty that Harlan's speaking to of helping your fellow human being.
Yeah.
And in that, you feel less alone, because, Harlan, you know, you bring up another good point, or at least what you said sort of prompted me to think about this, is where we are talking about families, we're talking about relationships, there are plenty of people who, and, you know, were the black sheep of their family. I saw something beautifully put on social media. I wish I could properly credit the person, but they talked about how LA, you know, for the artists, are all these black sheep that didn't fit in anywhere, and they come to the city and they fit in and they find other black sheep. And those people, there's plenty of people in the city, my point being, that don't have a family and might feel even more alone, and maybe they struggle with substance abuse in general, and this can trigger them. And a great solution or an idea is to feel less alone in these times, like Harlan saying, help out and kind
of exactly because that's what you're already doing on your everyday normal life, and you're doing it with the person that you're with, and you're having your family, and I get it, and I'm not saying that that's not important, but when you add helping other people that are in the same situation and coming together as a community, it adds extra things to you and to your self-worth.
Totally, yeah. And it would affect also, like, help lower your anxiety in general, because you're decentering yourself. Like, not everything's about you.
Yeah, exactly. And you're adding to everything else in the community and everything that everybody needs, joining together.
Yeah, the energy of collective healing is strong.
Exactly.
Harlan, how are you doing personally, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm doing great. You know, I have a lot of ups and downs in life and a lot of situations, but you know what, that's the way I deal with life every day. I wake up, and one of my sayings that everybody knows me for is, they ask me how you doing today, and I'm like, hey, I woke up on this side of the dirt.
Yeah. Well, hey, how did you go through anything in life, Harlan, that gave you that disposition?
I've gone through a lot. I've had a lot of loss in my life. I've lost a lot, a ton of family in the last 10 years.
And
I've lost a ton of family. I've been through a lot of stuff with business, and you know what? at the same time, I'm healthy, my daughter's healthy, and I wake up on this side of the dirt every morning.
So can you, do you relate at all? I don't know how long you were listening to Loveline tonight, but Dr. Tara was talking about how important it is when you're coping with loss and tragedy to begin with positivity, if you can find that in yourself, and begin with, you know, maybe gratitude for what you do have. Would you attest to that, how important that is?
It's very important.
And
it's...
go on.
When you have loss, I feel like, sorry, I'm trying to think the best way to put it, but like we all have loss in life, and that should just give us motivation to continue to move forward in our lives to do better and do everything we can every day, because obviously we don't know when our last day is.
Yeah, and we don't know when our we don't know when our last day with loved ones are.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know when our last day with, you know, something like a house,
mm-hmm.
something like a home,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's the thing. It's like, you know, you hear the word structures on the news. I don't know if you feel this way, Harlan, but structures, and I get it. They have to say that, but these aren't even structures. They're not even houses. They're homes predominantly.
With memories.
Yeah. Or schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are
right.
somebody's.
They are. And as we've all grown up as children, we had homes that we lived in, and we had stuff with our families and growing up. And as we all grow up, we move out of those homes and we start our own lives and we do something else and we start new memories.
Not right? me.
Yeah, Muggs is. If you have any, hey Marley, if you have any tips on that,
you still in the same home?
Well, for the current time, I've bounced around a couple
for
times.
For the current time,
I've bounced around a couple times, Harlan. Don't worry about
and
it.
But you know what? I gotta say, I was in the same home. Not the same home, but I was on the same property because my property that I lived on had three houses on it. But I grew up on that property from the time that I was 1 year old all the way up until. All the way up until I was 47 years old.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think what we're talking about, too.
The same thing. I recently moved. I moved to Huntington Beach, and I moved, and I got out of there. And you know what? But now I have a new life. I have a new everything, and we all move on, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's all you got to do. Harlan, I mean, I'm so sorry for the loss that you were telling us about in the past couple of years, but you have a great head on your shoulders, and we appreciate calling the Loveline. We unfortunately have to take a break, but... I guess just keep on keeping on, man. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I hope everybody that has their loss today that they can have the same attitude of, like, you have to keep keeping on because life moves forward. And as long as we are safe and we have our family, that's the most important thing. Everything else is material.
Now that I think of it,
whether it has memories behind it or not, it's material. As long as our family's safe, keep moving on.
Yeah, absolutely. Harlan, thanks for calling in.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
Awesome. All right, if you want to be a part of the show like Harlan just did, the number, we are live on K-Rock if you're listening to us. We are not taped. It is 1-833-LOVE-191. I believe that checks out to 1-833-568-3191. I'm pretty sure that is the phone number if you want to get involved. We will be back right after this with more Loveline.
More Loveline still to come. Loveline.
With Kevin Kenny and Dr. Tara.
Loveline on K-Rock.
This is the world famous K-Rock.
This is Loveline.
We are back on Loveline. 1-833-LOVE-191 if you want to get involved. I guess you can also call, 800-520-1067?
Yeah, why not?
K-Rock.
Right, yeah. We spent all this time giving out that number, then Muggs is answering the K-Rock number at the same time. So, mixed messaging. It's kind of like dealer's choice. You can get a hold of us either way. Is that true, Muggs? You can get a hold of us either way?
Either way.
All right. Kevin Kenny, Dr. Tara, Loveline. We just heard from a caller, Harlan, that we were just talking about the past couple days here in L.A. and just how unprecedented it is and how to navigate it in a healthy way. And we've been highlighting all night long L.A. helping L.A., this amazing resource we've posted for you on K-Rock's Instagram. And Dr. Tara, these are places you can donate to, and we're going to highlight some more. So why don't you share that with the audience?
We have Screen Actors Guild National Disaster Relief Fund to support impacted members of the SAG community. Donations can be made to SAG AFTRA Foundation, which operates as a natural disaster relief fund. Los Angeles Fire Department Foundation. The Los Angeles Fire Department Foundation helps firefighters and paramedics fighting wildfires across Los Angeles. And Direct Relief. Direct Relief provide N95 masks, medicine, and other resources to healthcare agencies and first responders in wildfire-affected communities.
Awesome. And that is LA Helping LA. I know you're driving. You're like, whoa, she went so fast. You can check it out in written form at KROQ on Instagram. It's like the second post up there. It's good stuff for sure. Now, we talked about this at the top of the show, and we're talking about how to navigate tragedy, loss, mm-hmm. as a family, as a married couple, as just somebody dating each other, as loved ones, what have you, because it's tricky, and we wanted to get some perspective here, and this is actually a pretty good guest. We got Dr. Tara's husband, and when I found out that Dr. Tara was married, I bet that's a pretty remarkable guy, because you're a very sex positive woman, mm-hmm. and guys historically are pretty insecure, so it would take a very secure man and a very special man to obviously be with you, mm-hmm. and for you to see as worthy. And then I got to meet your husband Brent, who I was a fan of his art. He's an amazing artist. We'll talk about that when we welcome on the show here in a few moments. But I got to meet him backstage at Almost Acoustic Christmas, and he is just a joy of a dude to be around and a really good dude. And he's just the type of guy you pick that up immediately after meeting him. But I'm just so curious what it's like to be married to, a doctor of sexual health.
Yeah.
That is as sex positive and outspoken as you are. And we'll talk to Brent, and then I also want to play a little game to see if this is really built to last between you and Brent here. So, Muggs, did you get Brent on the line? Is that true?
He is on the line.
Okay, let's welcome on Brent.
What's up?
There he is, Brent. Woo. You're on Love Line, dude.
Hi, baby.
Wow. I would have never thought in my life. Hi, baby.
Well, you know, it's really funny to sort of take the listener, Brent, behind the scenes, is that Dr. Tara probably would not have known about Love Line, maybe, if it wasn't for Brent.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So is that true?
I'll take a little credit.
Yeah, because Brent, just set the table. You grew up in Southern California. Do I have that correct?
No. I grew up in Seattle, but I forgot what it was on 107.7, but we got Love Line every night. Listen to it every night.
Oh, yeah, of course. Loved it eventually did get syndicated. And they have a fantastic night show up there in Seattle that's hosted by me. So thanks for the plug there, Brent. To this day, I will say 107.7. If you're ever traveling. But Brent, you are a really incredible artist. Do you want to talk a little bit about your art?
Yeah, I would love to. Thanks for the plug. I didn't know I was going to get to do a plug, but. I'm probably best known for the guy who paints stuffed animals. I do big oil paintings of like piles of teddy bears, and I paint crazy stuffed animals. I do a lot of different stuff, but essentially I paint happiness and playfulness.
Okay. And then is that in terms of like your journey as an artist, because I'll talk about your journey to being married to Tara, of course. Your journey as an artist, Brent, was that always what you made from an artistic perspective, or was there something in your life where you landed on that and you were like, this is me?
Ooh. Do you want the quick little story?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So always the art kid growing up, went to college with the intention of becoming a dentist. Because I didn't think art was a viable career. Anyways, I asked my pre-health advisor, what courses I need to take to get into dental school. And she's one of the big people that changed my life. She goes, what do you enjoy doing? And I told her, I like art. She goes, okay, take an art major and you could, take all your chemistry and biology on the side. You get to spend college doing what you love. She changed my life. So started oil painting, fell in love with it. Got into dental school, kept painting, graduated dental school, said, screw this, I want to be an artist. And I've been doing that religiously since 2014.
Wow.
So he's also Dr. Brent.
Oh, you're a doctor as well.
he's a dentist.
Did I miss this like doctor sale? Were doctorates on sale one day and then I just missed it?
I want a doctorate now. You missed your chance.
Yes, exactly. My fragile male ego is showing, and we'll get into fragile male egos with you, Brent, because you clearly don't have one. But you and Tara met in a pretty incredible way. You met on an airplane.
Yes, we did.
Okay. Now, I met a woman on an airplane one time, and it was awesome, and I dated her for a little while, but it didn't really go anywhere. It was kind of just like the novelty of like, wow, we were on this airplane together, and now we're, you know, having sex.
You sat next to the wrong girl.
Yeah. Oh, clearly. Hey, Brent, I have done that many a time. But you obviously sat down next to an incredible woman, Dr. Tara here, tell us this story. This is like something out of like a Ryan Reynolds rom-com.
I don't know how much of the story I can tell, but
is it like inappropriate?
Hold me back. No,
did you guys join the Mile High Club like
we sat next to each other. We really connected. We talked the whole 5 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
Did she annoy you, Brent, looking back?
No.
Okay.
How do I put this? I know on the radio now. She was displaying all her assets.
Oh. And was she in the middle seat?
She was.
And then you can kind of peek a little bit, I think, from there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, yeah. All right. So
was I displaying all my assets?
Well, no, but you know what?
No,
typically,
no, no. Well,
you need
you
a window
a very
seat.
Tight shirt on.
You had a very tight shirt on, he says.
Yeah.
Typically on a flight, you need to book the window seat for a view, but it sounds like he had the aisle seat and had the view.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's the way to fly, I think.
Good analogy.
Now, obviously, that caught your eye there, Brent, but when did you know?
Brain?
Yes, of course.
And my conversational intelligence?
Yeah, I love Tara for many reasons, but one of the big ones is the person I have the most interesting conversations with are her.
Oh. And would you say that about Brent?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We can talk forever.
Really?
We've been together many years.
Is that key for relationships, like just to be able to talk for a very long time?
Yeah.
Yeah? Do you think that?
I think so.
Yeah. Brent, in your past relationships, I mean, did you ever struggle to connect from a verbal perspective?
Yeah. You know, I feel like I'm cheating a little bit because Tara she's got a PhD in communication. Like, the thing that I'd say one of the cornerstones to a relationship is being able to have good communication between partners, and she makes it so easy, and she taught me so much.
That is so kind.
So past relationships, yes.
That is so kind of you to say about your partner. She was not so kind earlier in Loveline when she was telling us, Brent, that you were a bad communicator when you first met. Would you say that's fair?
Oh, yeah.
Now, why were you, for the guys listening, because like, we don't want to admit we're ever wrong, right? A lot of dudes, we want to be in control, and we want to be the alpha, and I hate that term, but a lot of guys are guilty of it, and me probably at times too, and we want to act like we're the kings of the world, and the kings of our world, and sometimes it's you know, we don't want to admit we're bad communicators, but Brent, how were you a bad communicator?
Oh,
there you go.
There you go. That's him.
Well, okay. How would you say, Dr. Tara, how would you say he was a bad communicator?
You just got a display of it right there.
Stereotypical, yeah. I think, like, he didn't speak about how he actually felt, right?
Okay.
Like, he didn't tell me how he actually felt about different things. Yeah, he would, like, withhold a lot of emotions.
How'd you get him to open up?
A lot of me forcing reciprocity.
Removing the ball gag helped.
And chastity belt. Nice mug.
Oh yeah,
mug is here.
Take that ball gag.
Set
out.
The mood, you know.
But I think it's through my sheer will. I think it's through my forced reciprocity. If I share. If I'm vulnerable and I'm sharing the hard parts and even the ugly parts about myself, and I'm communicating honestly about the things that I've done and the things that I want to do and how I'm willing to change, I think that your spouse that loves you will then be more susceptible to like changing too.
So it's a matter of you opening up?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I've been in relationships where I'm overly communicative. All I want to do all day is talk. I'm Irish and I do this for a living. It's a nightmare if you don't like to talk.
But do you talk about deep stuff?
I love,
you know, because you can talk about like sports and like, you know, all the other things. And
wait, are you saying, wait, are you saying I do talk about deep stuff? Or are you now saying that I only talk about sports?
Deep stuff. Men.
Yeah. Do you just talk about men stuff or do you talk about deep stuff?
No.
Like, what are you most afraid of? What are your weaknesses?
No, that's why I honestly think that's why, like, I get, like, we've talked in the past about I'll get texts from people that to me from the past, like, you know, dating, were very sort of like frivolous, positive interactions, but very casual. And they'll follow me or they'll message me every now and again. And you can tell you mean something to this person. And I think for a long time, I just thought I was like a cool guy. Yeah, they like how I put that down. You know what I mean? But no, I think what it is that I immediately go to the deep stuff because that's what's most interesting to me. And especially if you do this for a living and you're talking to people that are quite interesting in the forms of like accomplished artists and things like that, that you can't, I mean, if I'm in a conversation about the weather, it's like I'm on a Black Mirror episode. I mean, truly, it's like, I just am like, what? Like, who is this person talking to me right now? Like, get me out of here. So I love deep conversations.
Yeah.
But I think that your assessment, I just want to challenge a little bit or get better understanding of Dr. Tara, that you can just sort of will a partner who is not communicative into being communicative.
Yeah.
Because you're communicative. I don't know if it always works that way because a lot of times, like quiet, I'll date like quiet girls.
Yeah.
Just to balance it out because I am a talker. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes they just never become talkative for all sorts of reasons. And it doesn't matter how communicative I am. So what is that?
That's probably trauma. Like if she has relational trauma where in the past she had shown her like feelings or opinions and then got shot down, like that's like a scar.
Of course, but how does somebody listen right now? Because I bet you that applies to so many people, especially women that are listening right now to Loveline. How does someone that has gone through that relational trauma and been shut down, and let's take it even deeper, somebody that may have been going through that at a formative age where they're forming their ideas of the world and they're forming their ideas of their self-worth and they're forming their ideas of what their contribution to interpersonal relationships is, how do you overcome that?
All of this goes back to self-esteem. Because people with high self-esteem know their worth are going to be willing to speak up and share their opinion and emote.
But what if you don't have self-esteem?
Then you start building your self-esteem.
How do you do that,
though? The very first step in building your self-esteem. Yeah, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. Yeah. Yeah, you're forcing penetration.
I'm patience, Kevin.
It's live radio. I need foreplay. I need foreplay.
Brent knows.
I'm not even wet yet.
Brent's like, I really should have talked like that 10 minutes ago. I could have. He's like, now they're fighting if I only talked.
Well, okay.
No, Kevin, you're getting some of that. You hear that communication going?
Yeah.
Right.
Giving it to you.
Research in positive psychology found that when you set up smaller goals, consistent goals, and you accomplish them consistently, that's the best way to build your self-esteem. So if you have a small goal of, let's say, this week I'm going to work out like twice. I'm going to do it. I'm going to work out twice. And you accomplish that, that's building your self-esteem. That's putting money in your self-esteem bank. But you need to be doing that for like other things in life too in order to build your self-esteem. You say what you do what you say you'll do. That's how you build your self-esteem.
And then you're saying, though, just because I want to bring value to the listener right now as much as we can, is if you do have low self-esteem, if you have gone through that trauma where maybe people told you to shut up in your friends group as a kid. Maybe your parents told you to shut up. Maybe like no one seemed to be that interested in you, you know, all sorts of things. And you have low self-esteem and you don't want to speak up. And you find that maybe dating is hard or connecting to people is hard, whether it's romantic or platonic. I just want to make sure we have this right. Taking small steps to make yourself more proud of yourself.
Yes.
That will then enable you to have more confidence. Because you know what else? Exactly. You'll have stuff to talk about. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big thing with some of these people is they don't have anything to talk about. Mm-hmm. But if you do things in the world, you go out, you do things.
Yeah, if you have hobbies, interests, if you read, if you like, you know, whatever. Even if you don't like reading, if you're a movie buff, like you have something to talk about. Like just have interests.
Right.
Then you have something to talk about.
And then you can talk about it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Well, Brent, I do want to play a quick game here, if you don't mind. Well, actually, before that, do you mind if I ask you a question that I think a lot of guys need to hear the answer to?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, you Tara's talked about this. I hope I'm not talking out of school, but you guys are in a monogamish relationship. Mm-hmm. And Tara, do you just want to reset that in terms of just the definition very quickly for any new listeners?
Yeah, it's like 99% like a normal monogamous relationship, but there's that 1% of if we want to sexually play with others, like, for example, going to, you know, sex parties, whatnot, then we have the ability to talk about it. And then whether or not we engage just depends on that conversation. Wait, but so it's like an open conversation.
When you talk about it, have you ever in the past, like, not, I don't want to compare it to a negotiation, but have you ever, have either of you ever been like, hey, I want to do this? And then the other eventually was like, no.
Yeah.
Why did you have to think about that longer than Brent
well,
did?
Well, we've had many like communication instances. So I'm just like thinking about it.
Right.
But well, Brent knows.
Well, so, and what was
Brent
what,
has good memory.
But I think people, this is interesting for people who are considering monogamous relationships or just like little, like, you know, playing with other people.
Yeah.
Maybe it starts with, you know, a threesome with another woman or something like that, right? What have you. What is like the, I think the fear, the apprehension is the downside. Are there any downsides to it? Like, have you ever gotten into a fight over a proposition?
No.
It's just kind of like, you know what? I don't know if that's for me. Like, what is it? Do you mind sharing? Like, what does it come down to if you want to just use like a broad example?
Well, I would say, like, I don't remember. This is not our last time, but one of the times there was, I was like playing with a girl's breast, and then like her boyfriend came over and tried to play with me.
Oh, and that wasn't like prearranged?
No, it was not.
Yeah. Oh, hold on. That guy, Brent should just punch that guy in the jaw.
No, that's not what you do at a play party.
That's not cool. No, that I think that's like, I would throw, need, you know what? You need refs at these parties.
Refs. That guy, honestly, I mean, we talked about it afterwards. That guy shouldn't have been in this party. There was 600 people in this party.
600.
600 people. Where did they put all of you? Was this at the Intuit Dome?
No, it was in London. No.
Baby, you got to tell them all about it. It was awesome.
This was a big. If you're just joining K Rock, we're talking about a big sex party that happened with 600 people in London.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then where was this? Was this in an arena?
Central London. They shut down the entire club. It was
people in LA don't know what that means. What do you mean Central London?
Oh well, like how do you say it? Central London is kind of like. It's kind of like West Hollywood.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And they shut down the entire club that has like four floors. Think of like the Cliftons. Have you been?
No.
In downtown LA?
No.
Oh, it's like a really
I don't go
iconic.
To LA.
Oh, well.
I got a tattoo down there once.
You're so bougie.
No, I just don't.
It's like Cliftons in downtown LA. It's like five floors club. So they closed down the entire place and the whole place became a play party of like entertainment. There's like entertainment of people shooting. Oh, yeah.
No, you're good. I'm just mugs. You're on the button,
really,
by the way.
Know. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So you're in this warehouse. It sounds like you're not a warehouse, but it's a club. It's
a
multi-story
building,
club.
Building,
and is everybody naked?
Yeah.
Okay.
And well, not at first.
Not at first.
Not everybody.
Is there like a guy? Like, you remember when you're growing up, and there was that one guy that always had to jump in the pool first, and like maybe you got everybody wet, and you're like, dude, the pool party just started. Like, we don't want to be in the pool yet. You know? Is there a guy that like can kind of kill the vibe by getting naked too quick?
Yeah.
Yeah. There are those guys, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm just trying to size it up.
Why are you looking at me, Kevin?
Yeah, well, I mean, dude.
Mox, would you be the person that gets naked too quickly?
How many guys?
I'd show up to the door with no pants.
How many guys at these parties? Stop looking at me when you say stuff like that.
Fewer than women.
Fewer than women, of course. Mm-hmm. But my question is, how many guys at these parties like are just watching and not participating? Like, is there a rule like you got to participate?
No, you don't have to.
You don't? Mm-hmm. So are a lot of the guys just watching?
I would say half-half, right, Brent?
Really?
There were a lot of people participating in that middle bit.
Yeah. It's. I think this is the big misconception people have about sex parties. I had the same one that Kevin did. I thought if you went to one of these things,
it's like
you were
orgy.
Obligated to participate. But you're not. You could leave your clothes on all night and go watch, and that could be your whole night. Or you could get completely naked and join join in with everybody. Like, it's really up to whatever you feel comfortable with.
And did you guys each independently attend sex parties before dating and seeing each other?
I did.
You did. Did Brent ever?
I did not, no.
So, Brent, a guy question, if you don't mind, is performance anxiety is something that may affect women, but it definitely affects men.
Yeah.
And did you have any reservations before, becoming active at your first sex party?
Yeah. But right before it, we went to a naked dinner. It was New Year's Eve. We went to a naked dinner where it was like 12 people and everybody ate dinner naked. You walked in, you took off your clothes. So that was a nice kind of
foreplay.
Segue. And then the party was later that night. So I was already comfortable, and I'm comfortable being naked around people. And like, I like being naked. So even at the party, I felt
Brent,
comfortable.
Brent, are you naked right now?
Yes.
I'm sitting in front of our fireplace naked.
That should become our soundbite. I like being naked.
I have so many more questions for Brent. I mean, we got to get to break in like a minute, but I mean, what do you think?
Answer your question, Kevin.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely I did. But
how do you overcome that?
No, the thing, what's great about sex parties is people don't give an F. Like, people are, it's a very supportive, like, not supportive, like they're coming over, you're cheering, you're on, but
right.
Nobody's looking at you. Nobody cares. If it takes you a while to get it up, then it takes you a while to get it up. Like, no big deal. Like, it's, it's no big deal.
Brent, do you mind me asking? I've met this guy once. He just seemed really cool, so I feel like I can talk to him.
I've never met him.
Well, yeah, I think we kind of kept you away.
Why?
She was introducing him to her work friends, and, you know, we wanted to make a good impression.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think you would have made a good impression. But, Brent, so did you go out like El Natural that night, or did you have, like, a performance enhancer?
No, I went all natural.
Really? Man.
Yeah.
If I was ever in that situation,
no.
I would have to probably have assistance.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. No, the first one I did take a little one. I don't anymore.
Was it a rhino gas station pill?
No. High end. Bluetooth.
By the way, you know, I got him a gift, Brent, a beer mug there on our first episode. I got him a, what is it?
It's a great rhino double XL.
Yeah, it's a double XL pill. It's like really powerful. And it costs more than the regular pills. And I got him that. And he acts like kind of cool on the radio. He's too scared to take it. I want him to take it and see what happens. And he won't take this pill.
It's pinned up to my studio wall right now.
Which is, by the way, like people go in there, Brent. Like it's not just his. He's got this up on the wall, and like poor people have to go in there and like work during the day. It's very weird. Brent, did you have any regrets after your first sex party?
No, it was
Brent loves it.
In my opinion, everybody should try it once. And again, you can go and you don't even need to take your clothes off, and you'll meet a ton of interesting people. You'll have a ton of interesting conversations, and you'll see a bunch of people boning.
I think we just found out our next Mugs on the Street segment.
Would you go to one, Mugs?
I'm being serious.
All jokes aside, yeah. Would you go to one?
Absolutely. It'd have to be audio only, but yeah.
They would don't you allow ever bring phones. It?
Oh, no, well, no, not even recording audio?
No, they don't allow phones.
Well, that'd be a hard radio segment.
But you could also report on it, like coming back from it. Would you ever be able to get him into one? Mugs, would you really go?
Yes, and I would definitely keep my clothes on.
You would?
Yeah, because I'm a grower, not a shower.
Okay.
What if you grow before you get in?
Nobody asked him to share that.
He's
trying to do something nice for him.
Sometimes he volunteers these information.
Yeah, and I go, just stop, man.
He just
you're
wants
ahead.
People to know like, about like, his body parts.
There's some guys that just should say less than more because then you can fill in the blanks with like cool things, not the awful things that come out of this guy's mouth. And you go, oh, okay. Well, Brent,
you're welcome.
We got to have Brent back on.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, I got
great.
So many sex party questions. Do you guys go regularly?
Yeah.
What's regularly? Like once a month?
We wanted to go once a month, but we're so busy. But maybe like once every 2 months.
I've been
three
more,
months.
I dated quite a bit in New York. I dated quite a bit here. I never came up in New York. I've been invited to like a bunch here.
Yeah,
it's a thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's a thing.
Yeah.
And, it's totally a thing.
And, I mean, just to put it out there, there are some, like, not legit ones that could be dangerous. So definitely, like, take care of yourself. Be
what
careful.
Are those, like, pirate operations? What do you mean,
no,
not legit ones?
Well,
what does that mean?
Like,
sex parties.
Like Diddy vibes.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Like, those non-legit ones. So
you know,
make
I almost
sure
got invited
you do your
to a
research.
Diddy party. I almost got invited to a Diddy party.
What?
I'll tell that story, actually, when we come back.
Okay.
Yeah. I gotta go. Brent, you're the
Love
man.
You.
We got to have you back.
Thank you, Brent.
Love you, too, baby. Yeah,
thank
yeah.
God
yeah, good talking to you guys.
All right, see you, Brent.
All right, see ya.
All right, I'll tell my Diddy story coming up next. I actually did. I was. I'm not exaggerating. I was this close to attending a Diddy party. That's next on Loveline.
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 With Kevin Kenny and Dr. Tara.
We'll be right back.
It feels so good, doesn't it?
K-Rock. It brings you beautiful love, and it'll drive your mind through 1,000 terror-filled moments.
Back with more Loveline.
K-Rock.
Where do they find those things? Those, like, sound bites. It's incredible. Shout out to Trevor, I assume. Behind-the-scenes magician here at K-Rock. It is Kevin Kenny, Dr. Tara, Loveline, 1-833-191. You want to get out of here?
L-O-V-E-191.
Get out of here. Just get out of here. I'm sure you have a job.
That was it.
Spear mug. it is Loveline. We are live on K-Rock. I was trying to give you the number. It's 1-833-LOVE-191. Also, Beer Mug just told us we're also accepting calls at 800-520-1067. And all night long, we've been highlighting L.A., helping L.A. And do you want to just share this, some more resources? If you are able to donate, we encourage you to, of course, help your brothers and sisters here in Southern California through some amazing organizations and operations. You can find this in text form and post form on K-Rock's Instagram. It is pinned to the top of our profile. Before we went to break, we were talking about parties and sex parties, and then you guys talked about a Diddy party, and I said that I actually almost attended a Diddy party, and this isn't like how Muggs... Remember last week, Muggs was talking about how he was like almost on a Grammys roundtable discussion or something?
Yeah.
That wasn't like that. I was at an award show, because Muggs wants me to tell this story. I was at an award show, and I want to be kind of careful about this. I was at an award show, and I'd never met him before. I don't even know the guy. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine was with me, and he knew him. So we went over to him during like a commercial break. I meet this guy. We're talking about MTV. We're talking about, I don't know, just music, whatever. Brief conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about a bunch of stuff. And then at the end, we say goodbye. And he daps me up, brings me in super close, and whispers in my ear, "Yo, are you going to come to my party later?" And I'm like, this is before any of these jokes and stuff like this. And right. I'm like, yo, I am so in. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm at an award show. I'm hanging out with P. Diddy, dude, for a second. And he just said, yo, I'm doing this thing after. Yo, and then he whispers in my ear. He's like, are you going to come to my party?
Did you know what kind of party it was?
No, I just thought like my dreams were coming true. I was like, this is so cool. I'm going to party. Because growing up, man, like those white parties out on Long Island,
he kind of
did all that for like 4th of July or something like that. And now it's a punchline. But at the time, this is a number of years ago, I just was like,
It was iconic.
It was iconic. And I was like, and I thought it was weird in the moment that he whispered. But then I was like, you know what? Who am I to say he's weird? He's, you know, this guy's, he's like a legend. He's a legend. And so what happened was that was, I'd gone through a period where I was like dieting and I wasn't drinking. And that was my first night of drinking in about like, I think it was like 75 days. And that happened to be the night. And we were at this award show and I got so obliterated. I remember at that award show, I spilt a drink on, I think, Meg Thee Stallion's aunt.
What?
And then like the producers came out and were like, hey, are you going to behave? Like, are you good? No. It doesn't run in the family, Tara. And I was like, yeah, I'm just having a good time. And then I was kind of being like a little bit of a camera, hound where I was really like overreacting in the crowd, trying to get on camera. If you ever go to an award show, by the way, and you want to get on camera, you overreact.
Be crazy.
To stuff. Yeah, just like overreact to stuff. And that camera guy will find you and your relatives will see it. So that's what I was trying to do. Anyways, I got so drunk that night that I got into a really, really bad fight with my girlfriend at the time. Mm. And it was probably like the most toxic relationship I've ever been in. And it was probably largely my fault in hindsight. But anyways, I was so drunk. I got this massive fight with her. She starts chasing me through, it was in Las Vegas, chasing me through a casino.
Whoa.
I then get a table at Wolfgang Puck's restaurant. I was very excited to eat there. And then we're in this fight, and I'm like, don't sit next to me. And she's like, you're crazy. Like, because I was crazy. And she's like, you're crazy. Like, stop yelling. Like, you're just belligerent. And I was like, you know what? Like, I'm not eating here with you. And so I ran out of the Wolfgang Puck restaurant, and I went kind of wandering down Las Vegas Boulevard, and I wound up at I wound up at a Del Taco.
Oh my gosh.
Talking to my buddy, and I'm recounting the night, and you know how awful my girlfriend is, even though I'm being awful. Uh-huh. And then I'm recounting the night, and I get to the point in the story where Diddy invited me to his party. And as I recount it, I realize, oh my gosh, I messed it all up. This amazing career opportunity. I could have partied with P. Diddy. He personally invited me to this party. And here I am at a Del Taco on Las Vegas Boulevard, drunk, belligerent, talking to my buddy in Long Island, New York. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good thing you didn't go.
Good thing I didn't go. Because in the moment, I thought I really messed up. And now I think I really was like saved by a guardian angel.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe Muggs was looking over me that night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always in Vegas. Looking over.
What does that mean?
I was just in Vegas.
What does that mean? You were just in Vegas.
Yeah.
Now, did you do any, like, I always just assume in your personal life, you're just, like, always having sex. You're always going to sex parties. Like, if you're in Vegas, it's for, like, the AVN Awards.
No, I went to the Sphere. Have you been?
No, I haven't been to the
Sphere. Oh, it's incredible.
I've been to the Cosm, which is, like, the poor man's sphere. That's the sphere we have at home.
The Sphere is the cool, best though. Thing in Las Vegas.
What'd you see there, Tara?
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
Not at all. There are some really cool places in Las Vegas that I should take Muggs to.
Like strip clubs?
Oh, yeah. There's really cool places.
All over those.
Yeah?
What'd you see there, Tara? What'd you see at the Sphere?
It was an Earth documentary.
Ooh, that would be sick.
You went to... Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
You went to the Sphere.
Yeah.
And you didn't see a concert.
No,
you
saw, I went like, to see the Earth documentary.
The Earth documentary? Yeah. Is this the one that like we can probably watch on Netflix?
No. It's made for that specific setting. Like, it's incredible. You are completely consumed by all the...
Give me an example of like what's a scene in Earth.
Oh, one of them was in this cave, and it smelled like cave, and you feel like you're in a cave because
who's in charge of like
wraps
crafting?
Around.
Who's in charge? Because I think the Dolans own that. I think it's like an MSG thing. Like, who's in charge of that
smell?
Venue? Like, there's definitely a smell guy at the Sphere, and there's definitely like a team underneath that smell guy, and that guy literally is going. No, more cave. Not cave enough.
Yeah, it like, smells like
process.
Cave.
Really?
Yeah, it was so accurate. Like, I've been in caves before, and it smells like cave, and it was incredible. And there was an orange field that smelled like orange. There was just, it's incredible. It's an
were
incredible
you on drugs?
Experience. No.
You weren't? You were, but you weren't?
No.
You weren't?
No.
Okay. She wasn't.
No.
If you're listening,
no.
She was.
No.
Yeah. It sounds like you were on drugs. all right. Well, so, you know, we're telling stupid stories about Diddy parties and stuff like that. And but there's a heaviness, too, this week in Los Angeles,
yeah.
Of course. And we just were talking about L.A. helping L.A.
Yep.
And earlier in the show, if you're just listening now on K-Rock, please check out the podcast. It'll be available in a matter of hours. You can also just subscribe to the podcast, I think.
Yes, yeah, subscribe.
You can just subscribe to it, and you can go on Spotify, you can go on Apple Podcasts, you can go on the Audacy app, AUDACY, and if you subscribe, what's cool about that, not just to do a plug live on Loveline, but what actually is fundamentally cool about that is you will just get served automatically this episode when it drops in a couple hours, if Muggs uploads it as he's supposed to.
I will!
Okay.
And on YouTube, definitely subscribe, like, comments, you know, I respond to all the comments.
Smash that like button.
Thank you for, you know, watching.
Yeah. Well, that's all she says, by the way. Don't overpromise. You just go, thank you.
Hey,
thank you.
Maybe I'll say more next
time. Thank you.
Just because you're making fun of me.
I'm kidding.
You have a small penis.
Yep. Yeah, she says that sometimes, too. All right, but I'm trying to transition to, like, something, like, heavy here. And he plays that sound clip. Maybe we need that levity right now, honestly. But in all seriousness, what I was trying to say is that earlier tonight, we were talking about how to manage grief and coping and how tragedy can affect in a positive and negative way or romantic relationship, because these are all things that people where we do this show from in Southern California are going to have to navigate now in the aftermath of these wildfires that have just devastated the city. And in the spirit of that, we're going to actually speak with a cognitive scientist.
Yes.
But there's no cognitive scientist on the line. So, Muggs, Would you like to get a hold of this cognitive scientist?
Yeah.
He said calling, it keeps ringing.
Okay, well, that's great.
Hold on.
Yeah, hold on. This is awesome.
No, which number did you go?
833-LOVE191.
The number we gave out.
All right, tell him to call one more time, okay?
Oh, this is...
Live radio, people.
This is Muggs Radio.
Yeah. Muggs Radio. What were you doing? Playing with the cup?
No, what he's doing is he's YouTubing Diddy songs. And he's going, which one should I play?
Tell him to call back. If not, text me the number and I'll call him.
Tell him that, but then why don't we tell the audience, since we are live on the radio, guys, who is this cognitive scientist and what is a cognitive scientist?
He studies cognition.
Okay. And do you want to introduce?
Cognitive science.
Okay. Muggs, can I take this call, please?
Yep, you can take it.
Now, Tara, what is this cognitive scientist's name?
Dr. Scott Barry Kaufman.
Okay. Does he like Dr. Kaufman?
Yeah.
Okay. Dr. Kaufman.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for making the time this late at night on a Sunday. I really appreciate you.
Hey, it's the least I can do.
Now, are you based...
Am I on air right now?
Yeah, you're on air right now. So, you know, I don't think I'd have to tell a doctor of cognitive science. But, yeah, don't say anything bad.
now, I was just about to curse.
No, please don't. But Dr. Kaufman, now, are you? Do you practice here in LA or where are you based?
No, I'm a professor at Columbia University in New York.
Oh, okay.
But I have been in Santa Monica since 2020, about half of the year.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, so right on.
I love the weather.
Yeah, no, it's gorgeous. Columbia University. That's like, I'm from the East Coast. That's like my old stopping grounds. And I mean, an Ivy League school and just a fantastic school. I mean, people know Columbia out here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Just making sure. Muggs, you know how to spell Columbia?
Nope.
You get one crack.
You get one crack. There's two Columbias.
Hey, we have a cognitive scientist online. Can you shut up?
Continue, please.
Dr. Kaufman.
How are you? What are you all doing? Like, were you all affected? Are your houses still intact?
Yeah. Everyone here is safe, and we appreciate you asking. And we've just kind of been talking all night about, navigating the aftermath of this. Because right now, as Dr. Tarr pointed out, a lot of victims, or just really everybody in the Southern California area, are probably just in some form of survival mode, which we've talked about. And we would love for you to share any sort of wisdom you can, Doctor, on... The cognitive processes that are that these people are going to go through, and just kind of, you know, if you could share some information, we would love that.
Of course. I mean, people really respond to traumatic situations in different ways, and we really have to meet people where they're at, so I don't want to give any blanket statements, but I actually have a book coming out in a couple months that is all about overcoming a victim mindset, even when we've been victimized. And so clearly, let's just be honest, we've been victimized by these, I won't curse, these freaking fires. And the question is, you know, what kind of mindset would be most productive in this moment? And I really think that there's a sort of, well, I'm seeing it everywhere, a very empowerment mindset, where people are, like, really taking action. Yes, you said people are in survival mode, but I see a lot of, like, giving mode. And I think that that's actually psychologically the best thing. I think people are doing it right. Like, I'm really proud of, like, humans right now. I'm not proud of wildfires, but I'm proud of humans. And just the way that people are distracting themselves from their own tragedies by helping others has just been one of the most heartwarming things I've been seeing, and I think that's quite the way to do it.
Yeah, you point out something that I think is really interesting, and if you can turn, or we're getting some feedback if we're on speaker there, if you could turn that off. But you point out something really interesting, Doctor, and I think this is absolutely a product of the echo chambers of social media, and it's probably a topic that you know very well in your discipline and the effects on people's mental health that social media has, where it pits us against each other. Because historically, like, America always had like a shared enemy, you know, where like it was like in the 80s, what was it, in all those movies, it was like Russia. And then in the 2000s, when I was growing up, it was like terrorism. And then somewhere along the lines, it became your neighbors. And it became like if people voted differently than you. And it became like, well, that's who we have to fear. We have to fear the guy down the street that feels differently about the issues that I feel. That's who my enemy is. And I think what you're talking about, Doctor, is, and I'm not saying you're agreeing, I'm not putting any words in your mouth, Doctor, but what I'm gathering is there's so much love now. Like we're united against this wildfire, mm-hmm. you know, not to personify the wildfire, mm-hmm. but, and I think that is doing and will do a tremendous amount of good. Mm-hmm. And I say that with respect to the tremendous amount of tragedy that we're facing. I'm not lessening that. I just think to find a silver lining is imperative right now. And I think that really is at the core of mm-hmm. the silver lining that this presents Southern California yeah. is it's about coming together against a united thing versus yelling at each other. Or the
yeah,
looters.
What you're saying is quite profound. Yeah, no. Everyone is united against looters, scammers, arsonists. I mean, just it's mind-boggling to think that they're, like, we're seeing, like, people starting fires now, right? Like, thinking that they're cool doing, I mean, it's unbelievable. And I think no matter what our politics, we're all united that, like, exploitation is wrong. And we're seeing, you know, this transcendence of these kinds of boundaries and a great unity. There's a phrase in my field of positive psychology called post-traumatic growth. And I think that it for a lot of people, I mean, that's too soon to like, you know, people are still in survival mode, but I'm already seeing glimmers of people like growing and realizing, first of all, realizing that in 4 days, your entire life and everything that you've held dear, like your family, your house, like just how quickly that can be taken away, really can walk you into a state of gratefulness that unlike you've ever had in the past. And I think that's a form of post-traumatic growth, is being able to cultivate gratefulness as an orientation toward life, I'm not talking about gratitude, I'm talking about gratefulness. It's a phrase that my friend Christy Nelson writes about in her book, Wake Up Grateful. She had stage 4 cancer, and it just walked her into this constant state of gratefulness for everything, and being able to see, you know, being able to appreciate so many things that she never really fully appreciated before. And I'm seeing that everywhere right now.
What's the difference between gratefulness and gratitude?
Yeah, it's a great question, because gratefulness is an orientation toward life. It's not like with gratitude, you're like, oh, thank you for giving that to me, or thank you for that gift. I have so much gratitude for that. But gratefulness is not about only the good things that are coming your way. You can actually be grateful for the terrible, horrible things that come your way as well. So it's actually a mindset where you're like, wow, you know, there's something, a lesson I can learn for all of this. There's something, you know, for instance, a lot of people are like, wow, you know, I suddenly like see what really matters in life, you know, like that. It's not saying that we would prefer there being a fire. It's not like, thank God there's a fire. That's not what it is, right? But it's saying, given that I can't change what has happened, what can I be grateful for moving forward? And it's a real orientation towards life.
Well, and Doctor,
we can have for the rest of our lives.
What you're describing there at the end is it's sort of like taking a page out of Stoicism. And, you know, one of the things, if anybody who looks into Stoicism, and I think that this is a great time to do so if you never have, is there's the thing that happens to you, and then there's this middle part that people don't talk about. The middle part is how you respond to that thing. Most people are walking around, they're going, this thing happened to me, and that means this is how I feel. But there's this middle component to that, which is you deciding what it does to you. You know, the old adage of like, you know, like you allow people to hurt you, or what's the, it's almost midnight here on a Sunday, so my brain's a little fried. But you know, it's like, you know,
yeah, it's like,
I'm with you, brother.
You know what I'm trying to say? But I do think that when you look at these images, that, I mean, just looking at the images are traumatic.
It's
insane. And you think about just like the humanity and how this has really reduced a city to like just this really primal perspective of what's important and what is tangible and what you can take with you. And I think it's going to give this city 2020 vision. And I think it's the only thing that can happen is this makes Los Angeles the strongest city in the United States. And you really start to assess like looters. What the hell are we doing with these? Like, that's over.
Yeah, like, is there a cognitive science explanation behind looters?
you have to understand people, people who feel like they have no sense of control over their environment whatsoever will resort to all sorts of things. And so, I'm not condoning it, but, you know, getting in the mindset of certain people who just feel like even the littlest thing allows them, it's a power, it's a control thing. Same with arsonists. And it's a shame. It's a real shame, but some people are profoundly desperate.
Well, do you think it's desperation, though, or do you think it's sort of a culture where these things are allowed or, like, the punishment isn't so severe that there isn't a fear from a cognitive perspective? And so it's sort of like when you're internally thinking of, like, risk-reward, you know, in a culture that sort of like we talked earlier tonight of like, you know, obviously
you can steal up to $950.
Yeah, some of these laws are changing and for good reason. And we do have to go here in a minute. Muggs is telling me, but I just wanted to finish on that note I was saying, which is that this really does reduce us to, you know, on a primal level, I think, to what's important. And I think it's going to make us stronger. I think it's going to make us the strongest city in the United States. And I think it's going to allow us to get rid of all of this BS, like looting and like crime and like arguing with each other and like making enemies out of our neighbors. And I think that that's the silver lining we kind of have to focus on going forward.
Yeah,
absolutely. Hey, doctor.
I know.
I got to run. I hate to cut you off.
Yeah.
It's live radio.
Sure, no problem.
But I would love to have you back on.
Got it.
I would love to have you back on.
Really nice to talk to you guys.
Likewise. All right,
Thank you.
Glad you're safe.
Bye.
Awesome. That was Dr. Kaufman right there. And then we should have him back on when that book comes out.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This is live radio. We got to get out of here. We got timestamps. It's Kevin Kenny, Dr. Tara. Where can people find you?
Lovebites.co, LUVBITES.CO.
Awesome. Muggs?
Yeah?
Where can people find you?
Here.
Oh, I was going to say. Hey, we'll see you on the next Loveline. Peace.
This has been Loveline. The opinions expressed on Loveline are not necessarily those of staff, management, sponsors, or the station.
Loveline is produced and engineered by Jonathan Beermug Cantrell. Loveline is a presentation of the world-famous K-Rock.
You hang up first.
No, you hang up first.
I'm not hanging up till you hang up, so hang up.
Well, I'm not hanging up till you hang up, so you hang up.
Okay, on the count of three, we'll both hang up. Cool?
Cool.
One, two,
three.